still in this bizarre story, Perek Chaf, chapter 20, and wrapping up a note from last time. But remember what had happened. This fellow, the Levi, broadcasts his message around the country, and when the people gather, he tells them what happened, kind of adjusting the story perhaps, omitting the fact that he turned her over. And the nation is motivated. They want to see justice, and they are willing to move to carry it out. They carry out a lottery in order to make sure they will have people to provide supplies on behalf of the army, or alternatively, the lottery is a call to God to take a hand in their effort. And Pasuk Yud Aleph, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 20, sentence 11, concludes, Vayayasev kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir ki ish echad chaveirim. All Israel, of course minus Binyamin, was gathered to the city as one man, chaveirim, and chaveirim meaning, as Abarbanel notes on your sheet, ki ish echad chaveirim, rotze lomar, lo be'erech heyosam shvatim nifradim, not as separate tribes, aval behiyosam ki ish echad chaveirim she'ish el re'ehu ya'azoru. They will be as one, allies helping each other. Ish Israel Ya'azoru being a pasuk from elsewhere in Tanakh. But the point is that we have overcome separate tribal identity. And again, whether this story is in the beginning of the book or at the end of the book affects how I understand that. Either this story really took place in the beginning of this era, after Yehoshua, in which case the unity is more understandable, right? And it's after this story that they really become so tribal that by the time you get to Devorah, she can't get all the tribes to fight on behalf of each other against Canaan. Or this story is at the end, where it's placed, in which case it's really surprising to see this unity because they've spent the whole book not being allied with each other. But here they are now chaverim, not separate tribes. They are together as one. And yes, Dave.
He said re'ehu ya'azoru.
Yes.
Is that not in the negative context of for Avodah Zarah? That pasuk where it comes from.
Ish es re'ehu ya'azoru l'achiv yomar chazak.
Right.
Yeah. I believe. Well, let's find out.
I'm wondering if there's a remiss here that it was a unity but not a good unity.
Let's see.
I know it's a beautiful song by Avraham Fried. I remember when first hearing it, I thought such beautiful words, and I don't know why. I vaguely remember looking it up, and it was in the context of Avodah Zarah. I very well could be wrong. Thanks for looking it up.
Yeah, now I'm gonna take a look now and see. I don't remember it being that way, but it could be. Well, I guess I can share it. I'm on the computer. Might as well do that. So we're in Yeshaya Mem Aleph here. And it's talking about Hashem as an intimidating force. So pasuk hey there in Perek Mem Aleph in Yeshaya, Reuim v'yirau, Ktzos haaretz yecharadu. All the nations should see and be afraid. Karvu v'yesayun, Ish es re'ehu ya'azoru l'achiv yomar chazak, v'yechazik charash es tzarif machalik patish es holem pam, Omer l'devek tov. There's another fun pasuk, right, from the Tanoim. The tov hu v'chazkev masrim lo yimot. So is this talking about let's see, let's look at the Mefarshim. Yomar chazak lemilchama ulayam dulahem Eloheihem. So this Rashi supports you. Ish es re'ehu yomar chazak to fight against God. One will help the other to fight against God. Is the way that Rashi reads it. So that supports your read. Yeah. The Gemara Chagiga is what's coming next.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. But yes, the answer is that this pasuk is in context in Yeshaya a negative, but that doesn't stop Abarbanel from using it simply as a turn of phrase out of context. And in fact, that's where Chuck wants to go, is what I was going to show you next, which is the Gemara's use of our pasuk out of context. Our pasuk says that all Israel gathers as chaverim. They gather as one. Take a look at source number two, the Gemara in Chagiga. Uvishas haregel hakol ne'amanim af al hatruma. They're dealing there with an interesting law. The rule ordinarily is that in order for you to be credible, to say that your produce was tithe, you have to be a chaver. You have to be someone who has accepted upon himself that you are going to tithe things properly. However, at the time of the regel, people gather in Yerushalayim, everybody has automatic credibility. And the Gemara asks, Minohani Mili, how do you know that? Where does our Mishnah and Chagiga get that idea? So Amar Bishua ben Levi to Amar Kro. Bishua ben Levi quotes our Pasuk. Because all Israel gathered as one, Chaverim, as Chaverim. Hakasuv asan kulan, Chaverim. The text makes them all into Chaverim. Chaver, meaning that status of somebody who has accepted upon himself that he's going to observe the laws of tithing as well as the laws of purity and impurity. So everybody becomes Chaverim. Now clearly the term Chaver doesn't mean that in the days of Sefer Shoftim. What the Gemara is doing is a play on words. It's reading it as though those people were identified as chaverim, meaning people who are careful about Truman Maser. The truth of the matter is that that's not really the message. The message is not that a pasuk here in Shoftim, in the story of Pilegish Begiva, is talking about purity and impurity and tithing. Rather, as Rashi actually says in the Gemara Nida, where this also appears, Nida Lamed Daled, it's saying that when we gather together, we all have the status of chaverim. Automatically. So, the Rambam explains, and others explain, that the idea in this Gemara is not really that when people gather together, suddenly they become careful about Truma and Maser and all of that. Rather, it's that the goal of gathering everybody together is at least in part to create achdus, to create a sense of unity. And if you're going to create a situation in which everybody gathers together but they can't trust each other to be able to eat together, then you're going to destroy that which you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to create unity, and in fact, you will create strife. And therefore, the Rabbanan said, since the whole concern that we have that the tithing would have been done improperly is fundamentally a rabbinic institution, we are going to suspend it during the time of the regel and everybody will be credible. That's the rule. There's a lot to be said about that rule. But the point that I'm making here is just that it's really funny. Funny is probably not the right word. It's absurd that we're linking this halacha about purity and impurity and people tithing and so on with a pasuk about this gathering for war against Binyamin, which will end up being a catastrophic event in which there are no good guys. We're just tying the two together. Chuck, what were you going to say about this?
Nothing as profound as you just said.
Nonetheless.
No, not really. All I was going to point out was that the context is that they were coming to do something proper, scrupulous in the performance of mitzvot. When they get that title of chaver, it's a very important title.
Right.
You know, so the initial gathering wasn't viewed, doesn't seem. The way I read the excerpt from the Talmud was that they had a status of a proper status.
Right.
Like, we're looking upon this as they did something really horrible because they wiped out the tribe of Binyamin.
Right.
But it seems as if the Talmud is coming to tell us that at the outset, when they first gathered, that wasn't the point.
I mean, it could be. They're good people at this stage, and that's the way that we're looking at it. It's also possible that we're taking a pasuk completely out of context, because that happens. the Gemara does that with psukim. You know, and we do it with Gemaras. Meaning, whenever I learn this Gemara, I'm always reminded of the Gemara of Basra. I think I commented about this in a shir at some point, where there was a song, since we quoted, David, you quoted one singer before, so Mordechai ben David, I think he was the one who had the song, Chavra Chavra Islay. You know, you remember that one?
Maybe Dedi.
Maybe Dedi who had that, it could be. It was a very popular wedding song at some point. Chavra Chavra Islay, v'chavra de Chavra Chavra Islay. Literally, your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend. And it was a very popular wedding song, and you can see why. It sounds like a very nice message until you look at it in the Gemara, and you realize that that's actually in the laws of Lashon Hara. And what it means is that if somebody says something and somebody else overhears, you can assume that the whole world is going to know it because your friend has a friend and his friend has a friend. So that becomes a wedding song. So we all take things with or without context. Okay. So Back to the decline here. The war is going to begin. First, they're going to try diplomacy. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayishlechu shivtei Yisrael anashim b'chol shivtei Binyamin. The people of Yisrael, meaning all the tribes minus Binyamin, send messengers throughout shivtei Binyamin, the cities of Binyamin. It says shivtei. Right, tribes of, but what we really mean here are families of, or cities of. Rashi notes that Binyamin has 10 kids, right? Bela, Vavecher, Ve'ashbel, Geira, Naaman, Echiv, Arosh, Mupim, Chupim, and Ard are the sons of Binyamin. So you have 10 sons of Binyamin, and if you add in Menashe and Ephraim, you get 12. So it's as though Rachel has 12 Shvatim. So these are Shivtei Binyamin, Rashi notes. Radak has another twist. He says, well, there are 10 families of Binyamin and they fight opposite 10 tribes because Levi sits out the war. However you want to slice it, the point is Shivtei just means the family. So they send messengers through all of the families of Binyamin saying, Ma hara'a hazos asher nihyesa bochem. Now, I'm not going to translate that yet. I want to come back to that. I want to finish the sentence first. It continues in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Ve'ata tenues ha'anashim b'nei v'liyal asher ba'givah unamisem. Turn over those rotten people from Giv'ah. We will kill them. Unva'arara am Yisrael. And we will eradicate evil from Israel. V'lo avu b'nei v'nyamin lishmo b'kol acheihem b'nei Yisrael. And Binyamin is not listening. They are completely not interested in cooperating. So, a few things here. First of all, in case someone was going to ask me, if you're looking in a Tanakh that prints things properly, the word B'nai is understood to be there, but is actually a gap in the text. I don't have anything to say about it, except, yep, that's true. It happens also in Megillas Rus. It's more famous in Megillas Rus because we read that, you know, publicly. It's a very odd thing. I don't have an explanation for it. But I wanted to go back to the beginning of what they said. Their message is, Ma hara'a hazos asher nihyesa bachem. So some people here have English translations. Someone tell me how their Tanakh translates the opening of the message, Mahara Ahazos Asher Niyasab Bachem.
I have this evil thing that happened among you.
What is this evil thing that happened among you? Which translation is that?
Ma'am Loez.
Ma'am Loez. Okay, so that's one. Ori, what do you have?
What wickedness is this that has come to pass among you?
What wickedness is this? And what's that translation?
That's Sansino.
Sansino. Anyone have an art scroll? You can admit it.
I have Sfaria, which is similar to the first translation.
So Sfaria
is the evil thing that has happened among you.
Sfaria has a few options. Is it the default one that you have?
Yes.
Okay, so that's...
I have a JPS one here as well.
The default one is JPS.
Yeah, so this is a JPS one.
Okay. The reason I ask is because everybody there knows what happened. When you send this message, what is this terrible thing that has happened? Number one, you already know. And number two, you have telegraphed that you already know, because you said this terrible thing. Right? You've already judged. You've already conveyed your judgment. So Professor Kaufman says that it's asking, how could this have been allowed to happen? It's a greater, broader indictment. It's not just about Giv'ah, but it's, what kind of shop are you guys running that this could have happened? That's Professor Kaufman's read. But Abarbanel says something which serves us well elsewhere in Tanakh as well, which is the word ma does not always mean what. The word ma is sometimes an exclamation, like an expression of shock. Can you give me an example of where you see the word ma used as an expression of shock? There are a lot of psukim like this when you start thinking about it. Ma rabu masecha Hashem. Right? That doesn't mean what are the many deeds of yours, God. It means ma rabu masecha Hashem. How amazing are, how great are your deeds, Hashem. Ma rab tuvcha asher tzafanta lireyecha. How great is that which you have stored away as reward for the for those who revere you. Or, my favorite example. Sorry? Ma'ahavti Taratecha is a good example as well. My favorite example is the Aruch HaShulchan's point on the Haggadah. Ma nishtana halayla hazeh does not mean how is this night different. It means wow, this night is different. Ma is an exclamation. So to here, it's wow, what in the world is going on over there? That's the way that Abarbanel reads this, the introduction. And they say, here's the deal. You turn over the people of Giv'ah, we kill them, and then we go on our merry way. No need for a war, no need for anything worse. Just turn them over, and we're going to execute them. So that leads me to ask you the question. And if you've read it already in commentaries, I'd ask you to just hold off for a moment. Why should there be a death penalty here?
Did the Kashmir die?
She did. However, in order to carry out a death sentence, what do you need? You need witnesses, you need a warning, you need 23 judges. It's not done by mob.
If you're coming in on zealotry.
Mm-hmm. True.
Is this not an act of zealotry?
So that's one way to cast it. It's not the only way. Abarbanel thinks that this is actually a court verdict. He says, this is actually appropriate. If you take a look at source number 3, on the sheet, he says there are multiple transgressions here, and it makes sense to execute them. He says, "Imeyos hadavar hazeh kara b'shevet Binyamin levad." Granted, this only happened in the tribe of Binyamin. V'shemin adin haya ra'ui she'anshei shivto hem yavaru hara'ah hazos, and therefore it's really for Binyamin to take care of this. And they should punish the sinners. Ushar shvatim yashuvu le'ohaleihem, and everybody else should go home. Yisrael chashashu la'arba dvarim. Israel was concerned about 4 things, and this is what motivated them to get involved. Rishon she'ein melech ve'ein shofet b'Yisrael. First of all, there's no king, and there's no judge, and no shofet at this point, right? We say there's no melech b'Yisrael. That's one concern of theirs in this regard, and therefore they're going to intervene. He's really addressing 2 questions at once. One question is, what's the crime? And the other question is, why are the other tribes getting involved? We're going to talk more about the other tribes getting involved later. Right now, I'm just going to skip to the chase in terms of the what warrants it here. So jump to the Hebrew, the end of the next to last line, Shlishi, the 3rd reason why the tribes get involved, Shahaya hachet hazeh zima. The sin here was one of sexual immorality, vahu avon pilili. That is a high crime. If you remember, the Torah in Parshas Achimos, Parshas Kedoshim, talks about sexual immorality as leading the Jews to be evicted from the land. Therefore, they need to get involved. But what Abarbanel does, I thought I had brought more of this on the sheet, but I don't see it. So I'm going to just say it myself. I thought I had brought more here. He identifies specific crimes. He says, number one, there was the mob attempt in the first place to rape the man. That's the beginning. Number two is, well, they didn't succeed in raping the man, they raped the woman. And as far as Abarbanel is concerned, there is kiddushin. Remember, we talked about how concubine works. Abarbanel believes that there is kiddushin, just no ketubah. And therefore, that is an offense punishable with death. Number three, he says, they are like the generation of the flood. They committed an act of Hamas, of violence, taking what they want by force. Number four, as Chuck mentioned, they murdered the Pileges. She died. And number five, he says, they commit this antisocial attempt to eliminate passersby. They don't want anybody passing through. And that's something that that Abarbanel brings in source number four. That they don't. This is an act against society. So Abarbanel believes the death penalty is warranted. This is not a special case. This is what should happen. Malbim.
Shouldn't there be a proper beis din, a proper hakira, everything?
So Abarbanel would seem to think so, and he seems to think that that's what's happened. He thinks this is being done by the book.
This was already. I mean, we say similar by Yosef HaTzadik, right? That when he came to the board, there was a whole beis din happening there.
Right, right. And how to understand that story is a good one. What kind of beis din are you talking about?
Yeah.
But Malbim is not impressed. Malbim does not agree with this. He says, if you're really talking about following the letter of the law, they're not going to be subject to the death penalty because you can't prove that they killed her. If you take a look at source number five, Im hayu olchin v'zeh achar mishpat ha-Torah benidon prati, if they were really following the laws of the Torah in this particular instance, in this particular case, lo yubalei givachayav misa, they would not have been liable for death. And he quotes, he references the Ramban, who we're going to come back to. In terms of them desiring to rape the man, so they wanted to, but they didn't actually do it. And he goes through the different charges and dismisses the charges. So then what's going on? Raksha Yisrael hiskanu al kinasa bekahal uvepirsum. He says, what the tribes are doing here is they're outraged because this was done as a mob. And this was done publicly. Shebaze nidonim kidin kofrim. And he says they have the status of people who are kofer, people who deny the legitimacy of law. Kirabim hamis asfim l'nevala gedola kazos b'shat nefesh. He says, if you're going to have a great number of people gather to perform this repellent deed, and to do it wantonly, b'shat nefesh, without regard for law, v'im kol ha'pratim sh'nitztarfu b'ma'aseh zos hem krovim li'ir hanidachas. He says, with all of the details that are involved here, they're like an Ir HaNidachas, a city that worships Avodah Zarah. They have the ability to execute them. Here are the key words. Lemigdar milsa. To fence in the matter. In other words, this is what we call Horas Sha'a. A ruling of the moment.
Okay, so we just had a previous story where you have a pestle, you have them doing Avodah Zarah as an actual Ir Nidachas, where you have Shevet Dan bringing a Kohen to do a fake ceremony, and Bnei Israel does not get upset, does not do anything, and it says that Pestle was there till he got exiled.
Right.
So why is that not the story where Albanese all gets together like he did when he built the Reuven and the guys built it? And Benazir came up and said how he built him as a Beta.
Yep. So we're not going to see that this week, but that is indeed a comment that some of the commentators make, that this story is here juxtaposed with Pesal Micha to show, look what gets the people angry. And look what doesn't, what they don't care about at all. They're not moved at all to act.
Once you're saying that, it means they're not justified. In other words, these aren't righteous people. And the concept of Chavirim and everything else is also in a negative, where this is what gets them motivated and not necessarily following the halakhas of Torah.
Well, yes and no, right? It depends how many layers deep you want to go with this. I would actually, and this is a little bit of a dangerous thing to say, but I actually feel pretty comfortable saying it. I think that I'm okay, not okay with, but willing to tolerate the possibility that there are Jews who get very, very angry when people harm other people, even if they don't get so angry about Avodah Zarah. I mean, you can't have Judaism without Ben Adam LaMakom and Ben Adam LaChavero. You need both. But to have Jews who say, we will not tolerate brutality against others, even if we're not going to be moved to act when it's about God, God will take care of God, is something I can comprehend. You know, that's one layer to this. I just want to, David, 1 minute. I want to go one layer deeper with it, because now I'm going to come back towards what Howie is saying. And say, on the other hand, if they're only moved to act when it is a matter of Bein Adam LaChavero, and not when it's Bein Adam LaMakom, only when it is social, and not when it's religious, so then maybe what that demonstrates to you, and I think this is what you were saying, Howie, is that when they act on the Bein Adam LaChavero, it's not really because of Torah at all. If it was Torah that was driving them, then they would have acted before also. David and then Chuck.
That it was only, right, the tower, Hashem only disperses them, he doesn't destroy them, because it was Ben Adam HaMakom, as opposed to the door of Mabul.
Right. Right, and you can bring ideas like this. That's a good example of it. You can bring sources to support this idea. Chuck, you were going to say?
I first have a textual observation.
Yeah.
The lady brought the rapes and murder of the concubine to the attention of all of Klal Yisrael. So it makes sense that they come and join. Where do we see in the text that all of Klal Yisrael was aware of the Avodah Zarah? I don't think we see it in the text. So it may be that we're casting negative aspersions for the non-reaction inappropriately. Because if it didn't come to their attention, why would we expect them to react? That's just...
I mean, you do know that the tribe of Dun comes through and they take the pestle for themselves.
Yes, so that might turn around and say, for that group of people from Dun, they, you know, they're coming with blood on their hands already because they're misbehaving. But the accusation against the other tribes doesn't work. Because at least until someone can show me that the text says that all the tribes knew about the Avodah Zarah and they sat on their hands and did nothing. The other thing I wanted to point out to the first part of your response to Howie is that during the reign, I think it was one of the worst kings of all, the boundaries of Israel were expanded.
You're talking about Ahav.
The boundaries of Israel expanded to the greatest length that they were. And it was even though we were having our hands full of Avodah Zarah. And as I understand the explanation, Hashem allowed it to be that way, notwithstanding the disrespect to him, is because there were shalom in Israel. The way we conducted ourselves to one another was such that that pleased God more than he was distressed about the Avodah Zarah.
Right, and you can bring quite a few sources in support of it. You can bring support for it.
So if we're kinder to each other, as hippie as it sounds, maybe that's more of a preference to the Rabbi Shalom than our being proper to him.
Let's not go overboard and suggest that either is preferable, as much as one is not grounds for total destruction.
If I'm only repeating, as I understand it, what Chazal said about the time of Abba.
No, I understand what you're saying. Right. I understood.
So, and I have just one other comment, and maybe this is too tangential, or you're going to deal with it later. But the dealing of Binyamin reminds me on how Levi and Shimon dealt with Shechem.
Yeah. So Shechem is part of this conversation.
The idea of Shtika Kehoda'a, when perhaps what the tribes were saying to Binyamin, they didn't say what a terrible thing this rape was. They said, what is this horrible thing that happened? Maybe they were talking about the fact that Binyamin didn't live up to its mandate to deal with crime, and their silence
so,
is what condemned them to death.
So we're going to come back to that. We're not there yet, but we're going to come back to that when we discuss the question of why Binyamin thinks that the rest of the tribes are wrong. Why does Binyamin defend Giv'ah? So that's where we're going to hit that. Okay. Other points just within this Binyamin Lakom Binyamin Lachaveiro, because we still haven't finished Malbim. Okay, so again, Abayar Benel thinks death penalty is warranted. Malbim thinks that this is Hora'as Shah. This is a special ruling for the moment, and he says something fascinating in the end of his comment. If you're following in the Hebrew, the last line in the Hebrew, the beginning of the line, in the English, where it says, this could not be done other than. V'zeh lo yuchal la'asos rak o melech Yisrael, she'echol lahargam midin ha'malchus, o klalus Yisraelim ha'sanhedrin barashayhem. This could only be done, this kind of extrajudicial act can only be done if you're the king, because kings can do that, or the nation as a whole led by the Sanhedrin. And as a side note, I brought this for you. If you look at sources 4 and 5, it's a fascinating idea that we're going to come back to, God willing, in Sefer Shmuel. Rabbeinu Nisim, the Ran, in his Drashos HaRan, which are remarkably good as sources on political structure within the Jewish people, talks about where the powers of a king come from. And he says, when Israel has Sanhedrin as well as king, the job of the Sanhedrin is to judge the nation's affairs. And nothing beyond that. That's all you do. You hear cases. Unless the king assigns some authority of his to them to carry out. That's when you have a king and a court. Aval kasher lo yiyeh melech b'Yisrael, but when there's no king, hashofet yichlol shnei hakochot, koach hashofet, v'koach ha-melech. Then Sanhedrin holds the powers of a king. Since Malbim here says there is no king right now, Sanhedrin has the authority of a king, and that's what Malbim is referring to when he says that the Jews led by the Sanhedrin could carry out that which normally would require a king. They can act extrajudicially. I also brought you in source number 7, Rav Kook makes this argument in a source that is very important as one of the underpinnings for the authority of democracy in Israel, when he says, if you don't have a king, and you don't have a Sanhedrin, then the power resides in the nation itself. And the nation itself is able to wield that kind of authority. There's a good support for Malbim's theory in the text itself. When the people make the statement in their speech to Binyamin, when they say, where was it? In Pasuk Yud Gimel, Unva'ara ra'a mi'Yisrael, we will eradicate evil from Israel. That language is not the language of a crime has been committed and we're going to have a hearing and a trial and all of that. That's language of Vi'arta hara mikirbecha, get rid of evil from your midst. Vague, general, and the sort of thing that can be very dangerous. And that's what they want to carry out here. So that's your second school of thought. First school of thought is, this is letter of the law. Second school of thought is, the nation led by the Sanhedrin taking the powers of a king to carry out justice and eliminate evil. And then the third approach is Ramban. And Ramban says, you're all wrong. He says, the whole thing is wrong. They were actually not right. And this is part of his explanation for why God does not destroy Giv'ah the way that God destroys stone. If you take a look at source number 8, Mipnesha yuchafeitzim va'orim lasos nivala ka'anshei Sodom, because the people had wanted to do something terrible like Sodom, ra'u ha'shvatim lasos siag la'torah, the tribes wanted to make a fence around the Torah, shelo ye'yosev lo ye'yomer kein b'Yisrael, that such a thing should never be done, should never be spoken of in Israel, Kamosha Amru Navara Rami Yisrael, like they said, let's get rid of evil from Israel. Vizehadin, whom Imasha Amru Rabosenu, Bezdin, Makin Vaonshin, Shalom and Atara Velolabra, Divre Torah, Lalaso, Siagla Torah. That's one of the authorities of a rabbinical court. They can punish in a case where the court does not license them to do so to protect the Torah. But then he says, I think they were wrong. He says, first of all, I didn't bring you the whole thing here. He says, first of all, the people were technically not deserving of death. And second of all, the nation did not consult with Binyamin in order to carry it out. And he says, that's why we're going to find something really surprising. If you had to give odds for the war that's coming up, right? You have 10 tribes on one side and Binyamin on the other. What would you expect to have happen? Logically.
Total defeat for Binyamin.
Yeah. They would knock out Binyamin right away. And that's not what happens. Binyamin wins the first rounds of the battle. So Ramban says, you know why? Because God is on the side of Binyamin. He says, Lefi da'ati shezeh onsham shel Yisraeli nagef batchila. He says, this is why Israel is harmed at first. Because this war was not legal. You want to know who was supposed to be the one to punish? That was for Binyamin to do. Not everybody else. It's for the tribe to judge its own. That's Ramban's position. Abarbanel has a fit. I didn't bring it for you. I just gave you bullet points from him. He has an absolute fit. He says, first of all, that's not true. The decision to punish Giv'ah is correct. He believes letter of the law. That's number one. Number two, the Shvatim are going to lose twice to Binyamin. If you're really right that they're getting punished for doing things wrong, they should have been punished once, punish them the first round, and then let them win. Number three, he says, if God is really against them, then they shouldn't have been able to win at all. But what we're going to see is that they lose the first two rounds, and then they win in the third round. And finally, he says, if you're going to tell me that this is true, go back to the end of Sefer Yehoshua. You remember we learned the end of Sefer Yehoshua. We learned all of Sefer Yehoshua, as a matter of fact. So at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, the 2.5 tribes are heading east of the Yarden. And they build this massive monument, a huge altar, at the crossing of the Jordan. And the rest of the tribes are afraid that they're building a Mizbeach. They're building an altar. They want to build a breakaway Mishkan. And they send a delegation to them at that point, saying, what in the world do you guys think you're doing? Do you want us to go to war against you? Abarbanel says, if you're going to tell me that it's wrong for the tribes, outside tribes, to take action, then it was wrong there also. Are you telling me that that was a mistake? So Abarbanel does not buy Ramban's argument. But those are your three views. Abarbanel, this is letter of the law, and it's right. Malbim, this is extrajudicial, and it's right. And Ramban, who says the whole thing is wrong, the people do not deserve it, and if anything, it should be carried out by the Shevet of Binyamin. That's the way it ought to work.
Just about that last point.
Yeah.
Was there a time lapse for Binyamin to take action, which they didn't? Or was this immediate? It seems like it was pretty immediate if you cut up the body and then everybody gathered.
I mean, it takes some time for everybody to show up there. Right, and that's certainly what Abarbanel will say. That's certainly what Malbim will say. Yeah, absolutely. But we're going to come back to this, because we have to ask why Binyamin defends Giv'ah instead of turning them over. So we're going to get to that shortly. First, I just want to show you what happens in the next few psukim. Chuck, you were going to say? You're muted. Chuck, you're muted.
I'm just at a loss why no one takes Binyamin to task for their not acting. In other words, let's say the Ramban's correct that it was Binyamin's task to put those men on to trial, and they declined. So if they declined, isn't it incumbent upon the balance of the Shvatim to come and take action?
Ramban thinks that either they didn't give them enough time, or that the next step is not go to war against them.
What would the Ramban say the Jews should have done if the judiciary sitting there at the time did nothing?
So the answer would be, again, he doesn't give us enough to work with, but either give them more time, or you take it up with them directly. Why aren't you doing something instead of saying to them, turn them over, we're going to kill them? Right? You masked for war. So let's see what happens.
What did the Ramban say about Pinchas?
Ramban?
Yeah.
He'll defend Pinchas. He'll defend Pinchas every time out. But Pinchas
what's the difference between what Pinchas did when he found that
Pinchas is in a situation where there's a crime that is ongoing, and he is stopping the crime in the middle while it's happening. Here, the event's over. She's dead, and no matter what you do, that's not changing.
The crime of the judiciary is not over.
No.
Every moment they sit and they allow the gentleman of Giv'ah to go unscathed, there is a continuing crime.
But you're not righting the wrong of the judiciary. Meaning, you're not now carrying out the trial that should have happened before. You're just killing the defendant because the judges aren't doing it. I'm pretty sure that in court that doesn't work, Chuck.
It depends if you hold that they held a trial like the Abarbanel did.
Right. I think you have to file a motion first or something. So, Let's take a look at the psukim and see where this goes. Pasuk Yudalid. Vayeasafu b'nei Binyamin min ha'arim ha'giv'asa. Binyamin gathers from their cities to giv'ah. Latzei islam milchama, to go to war in b'nei Yisrael, against b'nei Yisrael. So Barbanel, again, still picking on Binyamin, says those are two crimes. Number one, they're not punishing wrongdoing. And number two, they're now rallying to war in defense of Giv'ah. Vayispokdu b'nei Binyamin b'yom ahu me'ha'arim esrim v'shisha elef ish sholef charev. The census of soldiers for Binyamin is 26,000 swordsmen. Levad miyoshvei ha'giv'ah, aside from those who live in Giv'ah, his pakdu shvamayos ish bachur, and Giv'ah itself turns out 700 men. So 26,700 men for war. Do you remember how many warriors there were from the tribes?
400,000.
So it's 400,000 versus 26,700. But wait, there's more. It's not just 26,700. We've got slingshots. Mikol ha'am hazeh, from this entire group, shvameyos ish bachur, meaning from the 26,700, they had 700 either young men or select men, iter yad yamino, who don't have functional right hands. Right? Remember Ehud ben Gera from the beginning of the book? Kol ze kolea ba'even el hasa'ara velo yachati. They're so good with a slingshot, they can cast a stone at a hare and not miss. They will not miss a hair's breadth target. It's very interesting. When we get to the story of David and Goliath, so Malcolm Gladwell has a take on that story, which is completely wrong. Someone sent me a link to a video of him explaining his version of the story. And it's stunningly incorrect in terms of the text itself. We'll go through it, God willing, when we get there. Rafal may know because his wife was in the shiur when I did this with the women's shiur. There are certain things that he says that are very interesting, but overall he doesn't seem to have read the book. But one point that he makes is that slingshots were actually lethal weapons. And he points out certain things about the kind of rock that they had in Emek Ha'elah where David gets his stones. And he makes the point also that their accuracy was very high. And that's supported by the text here. I don't think he quotes this passage, but they're extremely accurate with the slingshot. And so 26,700 swordsmen as well as 700 people who are very good with the sling. By the way, also worth noting, the last word there in Pasuk Tetzayin, Kolei Ba'even El Asara Velo Yachati, and they won't miss. But the word in Hebrew is Chet. So from this, people get the idea that the term Chet means a deficiency. You missed. If you take a look at Tosfos, in source number 10, Tosfos in the Gemara in Shavuos, the Torah says regarding sin, may asher chata al hanefesh, to atone from that which one was chote. Havi l'rabbanan lashon chisaron. That pasuk in context, I should explain. The pasuk in context that he's quoting is the one from the Nazir. He has to atone for being chote against the nefesh. So Tosfo says it's not that the Nazir. It's 8:21. I can take a moment with this. You've heard the classic idea that a Nazir sins by refraining from wine, right? That's something that's familiar. The Nazir sins by refraining from drinking wine. So that's Bar Kapara's statement. However, the Gemara also brings the view that the Nazir has not sinned at all by refraining from drinking wine. The reason he brings a karban chatas is because he needs it in order to become pure. It's called a karban chatas because the rituals involved in the karban are the same as the rituals that are associated with a sin offering. But it's not, the Nazir has not sinned. And Tosfos seems to support that here by saying, when the Torah says about the Nazir, that he was chotei al hanefesh, he says, it means a chisaron, a deficiency. He had a deficiency, but not that he had actually done something wrong. He hasn't actually sinned. The Tosfos then goes on to say that that's not always what the word chet means. Sometimes chet is stronger. But I'm just showing you, because here we use the word yachati, to mean to miss the target, to miss the mark. Okay. Yeah, he took something away from himself. He was lacking. That's correct. However, chet, Tosfos acknowledges, can sometimes actually mean you did something wrong. It isn't always a deficiency. So, so Binyamin is ready to fight. So here we get to the question we've referred to already. Why does Binyamin defend Giv'ah? If I don't take Ramban's view, right? Ramban says they were right. This is no one else's business. But if I don't take that view, why are they defending Giv'ah? So Abarbanel says very simply, he says, "V'hinei zachar shebnei Binyamin chara apam." It mentioned that Binyamin was angry. Lefi shaloshochu aleihem bnei Yisrael mitchila. Because the first thing the Jews should have done was send a message to Binyamin saying, hey, take care of this. Vasu askama shalomidatam. They had done this gathering of everybody without involving the people of Binyamin. That's the way Abarbanel reads it. They're angry because you should have consulted us first. And we're going to go to war because you didn't consult us. That's one approach. Professor Kaufman floats another idea which we've seen throughout the book. I brought it in number 12. Haregesh hashivti gavar al hahakara hamusarit. Tribal feeling overpowered moral judgment. Our tribe comes first. But I think there's also another element here. We've noticed multiple times the statement, Ein melech b'Yisrael. There is no king. To a certain extent, when there's no king, everybody is king. Who gave you the right to judge me? You're no better than I am. You're no more credible than I am. What is it your business to judge me and to judge my tribe? I mean that not in the sense of sort of, you know, defending a bad decision by saying, well, who are you to judge me? They sincerely believe. Who are you to judge us? This isn't your place, you other tribes. So any of these could be the explanation for why Binyamin refuses to turn over Giv'ah. It's possible, like Abarbanel suggests, they think Giv'ah is wrong, but they're angrier at everybody else.
Yeah. My difficulty is, it's 400,000 people, and you're saying out of anger, they're willing to risk killing themselves.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, I just find that...
You ever see people when they're angry?
You're talking about people as a whole, so it means that there has to be leaders in Binyamin that everyone's willing to follow... to their death.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's scary. But people do this. That's a reality. On the one hand, you read the story and it's cartoonishly terrible. It's like, did anybody really do this? And on the other hand, I can totally identify real life events with what people in the story are doing. People do dumb things. That's profound, but I think it's true. So, one more pasuk here. Yeah, David.
Herd mentality.
Yeah, to a certain extent, yes. But Malbim says, look at the next pasuk, pasuk Yud Zayin. The Ish Yisrael hispakdu levad mi Binyamin arba meos elef ish sholef charev. The rest of the people, not counting Binyamin, I think obviously not counting Binyamin, has 400,000 swordsmen, kol ze ish milchama, all of them are warriors. And of course, we already mentioned 400,000 before, but beforehand it was an assembly to pursue justice. Now, they're actually committed to fight, and as Malbim notes in source number 13, nobody is backing away. Unlike in other wars, perhaps, where the Kohen warns and says, if anybody is afraid or whatever, go home, nobody backs down. Everybody is prepared to see this through against Binyamin. So next time, what we're going to see is the actual, well, first an inquiry from God as to what they should do, and then the first battles between Binyamin and everybody else. I have to go back and look at my notes, because I know that I had a source. I thought we might have brought it already, that addressed the point about them getting outraged here, but not getting outraged for Dunn. I'll have to go back and take a look. Okay, well. Sorry? Well, you can read ahead. All right. Well, thank you very much.